Tony Nash here with Plugged and Unplanned, and we're in the third week with Natasha Hawker, the author of From Hire to Fire. So easy to say, but then I always have to look at the cover and go, now what was that again? And everything in between. And just while we were preparing for today's session, Natasha brought up a really good subject matter. I think that all of us would probably want to know a bit more. It's about the firing or the letting go or managing poor performance in an organization. And I don't know what it's like for those that are listening who are the managers, leaders, or run their own companies like I do, but it always feels like it's a treading on eggshells kind of area, and that you are desperately worried about doing the wrong thing and it being very costly, but also doing the right thing, which is how we always view it, and about making sure that you create a space for someone else to come into the organization, or you know, that role was relevant then, but it's not relevant now. And so what are some of those key characteristics or those decision points, or that where you've gone past the point of no return? How does it all play out with all the companies that you work with?
Yeah, I think one of the things I would say up front is organizations need to be able to get rid of people. And we need that for two reasons. One is around flexibility. As organizations grow and evolve organically, different divisions may no longer be required, or technology will mean that a department can be drastically downsized. An example being a client of ours with a technology which is around how they bring work in and out of their business meant they dropped their headcount from 25 to 17, and it will drop down to 8 within 18 months. So there is a need there. The other reason why we need to exit people is big business can afford to have non-performers. I don't suggest they should have non-performers, but it can get covered up. You know, it doesn't hurt as much. In small business, if you've got 10 employees and two of them are non-performers, that's effectively, you know, 20% of your workforce that is a major issue for you. So one thing that we need to think about as a business is hiring better. Most people, when they come to us for help to get rid of someone, it's normally because of a hiring mistake. So get better at hiring is the first thing I would encourage your listeners to do. So make sure that you do a technical, a behavioral, and a cultural interview. Make sure that you do reference checks and background checks, that you use the psychometric. We use Harrison's assessment, which is a fabulous tool to help business owners work out, okay, this is what my interview notes and feedback told me. You know, it's another data point. It's not the only data point, but use all of them. And what we find is that most businesses tend to let that misbehavior or that poor performance drag on because no one wants to have that difficult conversation. And I think it's really important that business owners and managers get very comfortable with having those difficult conversations and very aware of what their legal rights are. You can exit people from your business, and you should. You just need to do it in a legally compliant way. And so I spent a lot of time in the book writing about what the process is and scripting it for business owners so that they literally can just, you know, cut and paste their own words into it. But documentation is really important. And you know, what we find is that the reason why people want to get rid of someone out of their business is very reasonable. And it has, but what they, where they come unstuck is the way that they do it. So an example being, Tony, is you have to offer them a support person, which is somebody to come and sit here while we have this difficult conversation that can be an emotional support for that individual. Because believe you me, and I've had those bad conversations as well with me, your head's spinning, you're not thinking about everything. And so that support person's there to say, well, remember when they said this, or this is what they were saying. You need to give that individual an opportunity to improve, unless it's an extreme example of misconduct, and then it's a whole other process. But you need to show that you've trained them, that you've given them every attempt to improve their performance. And then if you go through a process and that's not the case, then you can exit them from your business. But what we often find is that steps are skipped, and then they make one phone call, pay $68.80, I think it is, and then next thing you've got a request to attend a mediation. You've got 8 pages of paperwork to fill out on what happened leading up to that. Then you've got to attend a 2-hour mediation, and in which case they will probably end up erring on the side of the employee because you forgot to document something or not bring their support person in. So it's really important for business owners to get it right. And so I spend a whole chapter of the book going through how do you exit non-performers, because my true belief is we can't afford it as small to medium business owners. You know, we need to have a team of people that are good at their job, that want to work for you and that love what they do. And the often business owners say, I feel so relieved, and they were so worried their team would hate them because they got rid of that individual. Usually the team's there cheering, going, God, why did it take so long for you to get rid of that person? You know, because often they're carrying their load. And they know they're not a good performer. If you ask anyone in this organization, I reckon they can tell you who the top performer is and they can tell you who the bottom one is.
So when you have put this book together, and I don't want to give anything away, although I'm sure everyone is at the same place that I am who've followed this conversation. We all want to read it now. Yeah. We have to read it. We must read it.
Yeah.
Because there's just such important content in here that we need to know, which is a good thing for you and hopefully a good thing for people who want to buy your book. But have you got any oh my God, I've got to tell you a shocking story? Is there anything without giving,
yeah.
I mean, I know this is not a murder mystery here, but you're not going to give away the last chapter, but yeah. Are there things that you've heard that you can share that is just atrocious or also on the other end, really inspiring?
Yeah. Let me think of an example for both. I'll start with the atrocious story because it's timely with the time of year we're at. Work Christmas parties or work conferences are notoriously bad for poor behavior or misconduct. A specific example was we had I was actually on this conference and an individual, it was after I went to bed, an individual, I think, popped a pill and his trail of destruction left many casualties. He bit a boss on the cheek. He kissed a man who hadn't actually come out yet. He threw a girl on the floor and gyrated all over her. It was just mayhem until somebody worked out what was going on and escorted him back to his room. We conducted an investigation on his performance. He was mortified and said that he felt someone had slipped something in his drink. The issue was that many of the girls in particular were very frightened, and it wasn't sustainable him coming back to the workplace. He couldn't recover from that, and so he was exited from the organization. The irony is he actually got somebody to ring me for a reference check, and I thought, I was really amazed that he gave my name. He hadn't been with the organization very long, but I was really shocked because I thought, I think you pretty much know I'm fairly honest shooter. And so I actually had to ring him and I said, you're welcome to give my name out, but please know I will be giving a very honest assessment. Now, the reality was he was very good at his job. He just didn't know how to behave in a workplace scenario, or it had got out of control because of a decision he made. So that would be, and it happens a lot. And we often get called in to do investigations where people have misbehaved because, you know, it's really important that with investigations, it's a bit like a police investigation, and you have to interview all the witnesses. And then on the balance of probability, you need to make the call. Did it happen? Or you don't have enough evidence to make the call, or it never happened. And then if it did happen, then there's a secondary part of it is, okay, what do we do with it? What are the repercussions? Is it serious enough to exit someone from the business, or is it we do some training and we're okay again?
So did he concede and go, yeah, you're right, I cannot show my face there again?
He wanted to come back. He did want to come back. He thought he could make it right, but there was just too much damage.
And so he didn't contest it because there was no...
There was no grounds. Right. So the investigation was conducted appropriately. He was paid out within his legal rights. So he had no grounds for an unfair dismissal claim. Unfair dismissal, and this is important for your listeners, the test they use is, was the termination harsh, unjust, or unreasonable? And an example of it being unjust is where someone just walks in and says, you're fired. That's not fair. And so you would be fined up to 6 months salary of that individual and or reinstatement, which is the stinger in the tail. So if you exit someone from your business around that 45 age year mark, there's a good chance they might be reinstated because they are going to find it potentially a little bit more difficult to get a job. On the flip side, the the lovely stuff I see. I have an organization that we is a client of ours, and culture is everything to them. They love it. And they actually take their team away for 2 days every quarter, and they do 2 days of planning. They're completely involved in the business. They all get to choose, you know, what charity they give money to. So their engagement levels are 95-96%. Statistically, if your engagement levels are over 75%, you get 21% more productivity and 20% more profitability when you compare it to the bottom quartile. So engagement is the measure of discretionary effort. So organizations that are doing that, you know, authentic leadership, great communication. Our team, for example, we send everyone a bunch of flowers on their birthday. That's what we've always done. But we're very involved in giving back. We work with an organization called B1G1, Buy One, Give One. So every time someone becomes a new client, we donate. Every time someone buys the book, we donate. Every time somebody connects with me on LinkedIn, we donate. And what I've seen happen with my team with that giving back was, because we always donate rather than do Christmas cards, was my team started saying to me, actually, I love the flowers, but I don't need the flowers. Can you just do whatever you used to spend on the flowers and donate it to, for example, one of our big causes is giving a woman a microloan so that it's $45, I think, so she can go off and start a business in Malawi. So that's a real trend change, not because I wanted to help them, but they've decided they want to give it to charity, which I think is a really important thing.
So how's the employee engagement in your organization?
We assess it. We use a tool called Six Questions, which I think is a fabulous tool. It can be done on your phone, and it's just a smiley face or a sad face. And you can choose a number of questions. And our engagement levels last month was 88%. We want 90. But the global average is about 75. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest in Australia it's lower than that. But the feedback we get from that, not only knowing we can see trends, but they can also put comments in. So if they've had a bad time of it or something, you can start to see those trends. The other tip I would give your listeners is very much consider putting in an employee assistance program in place. We do these for our clients. Employee assistance is where they can get access to counseling 24 hours a day. As you know, with your 200 employees at any one time, one of them's going to be having, a third of them are going to be having financial concerns at the moment. That's the statistic in Australia. One in three of them are going through marriage separation or, you know, so it's really important if you want to keep high levels of attendance at the workplace and reduce your risk of attrition, provide some support for well-being, because we spend a lot of our time at work, but what happens in their personal life is going to impact you and the business as well. So it's a great tip for helping your employees.
Is that those tips in the book?
Yeah.
Great. And sorry, the one with the questions, the six
yes.
questions, is that a website?
It's a website. It's just 6Q and then apostrophe S, and it's a guy called Miles Burke. And great tool, business out of Western Australia, and we love it. I talk to my team a lot, and I would have suggested our engagement scores were around that, but it's great to get that data in and to see, you know, for example, productivity might drop. So why is our productivity score dropping this week? What's happening with that? You know, would they recommend you to a friend to work for them? You know, do they feel we are open and trusting with them, you know, so it's great data.
Sorry, so how often are they doing that?
Monthly.
Right, okay.
So they do it every month. We were doing it weekly. We worked out that was too frequently. But every month is about right. And the whole team, I can see who's filled it in. It's confidential. But I can see, you know, whether everyone got it and it's open for it. And they can do it on their phone. So they do it on the bus on the way home. Mm-hmm. Fabulous tool.
Great. So looking into a crystal ball of where we're all heading from your knowledge and experience, where's it all going? What can we expect to see changing? What can we be preparing ourselves for or looking at? What are some of the trends?
Yeah, I think organizations need to be aware of a number of things. The pace of change is increasing. So we will see the workplace of tomorrow in 10 years is going to look vastly different in my view to now. There's going to be a couple of things playing into that. Data analytics is really important. We designed a tool called Employee Metrics, which assesses a business for its current levels of HR compliance, risk and best practice and puts a price on that. It's really important that people have great data at their fingertips to make good business decisions. AI is coming. And the other big one is virtual reality. So one of the areas I want to get more involved in is, those difficult conversations. Let's use virtual reality to prepare you in advance in a safe environment. I think that will start to happen. I do think we will see a rationalization of some jobs. There'll be a number of roles that disappear. I think truck drivers is a classic one. I think anything where it's a very repetitive job, I think we're seeing impacts in even industries like medicine and law, which we've considered, the elite. There are parts of the AI stuff that's happening in legal where they're reviewing documents at a rate that a human being could never do, in terms of checking documents and things like that. But I will see there will be a new roles that come out as well. And that emotional intelligence is really important. The key skills for individuals, if you were trying to educate your children about what are the skills they need great problem solving or creativeness. They need the ability for high levels of emotional intelligence. And I think the other one is that strategic brain, to think strategically, not just in the transactional. And I think if they have those starts of those skills, I would love to see schools teaching programming across the board. I think it's starting to happen. It's not happening quick enough. I think our kids need to all be learning programming across the curriculum.
When you say school. Programming, as in?
Computer program, software programming.
Really?
I think that, it's going to be a skill that will help people in the future. And I think those kids that have got it have got an advantage. But soft skills are still really important. At the end of the day, people do business with people. The technology is meant to help us do that better and to free us up to do the stuff that we as humans are really good at doing and get more what I call the hack work done by computers that are better and faster at it than we are.
Mm. So one of the people think I'm a genius because of building Booktopia from nothing. Of course, I'm not, or maybe partly. But one of the things that I have done to cheat is I go to America and to the UK and I look at what's going on over there. And quite often I've come back and I've noticed certain things. Like I remember it was 8 or 9 years ago, and I saw that in online sales in North America, that if you had it in stock and you could get it to the customer quickly, then it would be game over. And I came back and I told the guys, and I think we went, I don't know, something from like 3,000 or 4,000 in-stock titles to I don't know, maybe 50. Mm-hmm. And now we have 150,000 in stock and still growing. And it's those kind of... So is there anything happening around the world that we can pay attention to that... or is Australia a leader, or is everyone in the same boat when it comes to these things? Because in my industry, online sales are around 8% of all sales, but in North America and Europe, they're 15 to 20%. So what's happening over there?
Yeah.
So is there anything happening around the world?
I think you touched on a really good point where you said you've made a point of going to the US and learning. I think as business owners, the one thing that has meant I've survived is education. So I've spent a lot of time educating myself and trying to be aware of what tools are available, what's happening, and you're going to get some right and you're going to get some wrong. I do think we need, as a general rule, we follow the US and we follow the UK. So if that's happening in the UK, same as an example in my space is in the UK, in Australia at the moment, we have something called flexible working. So if I've gone off, had a baby, I have the right to request flexible work from you up until my child goes to school. In the UK, that age is actually up until when they're 16. and we follow the UK. So I have no doubt that in time, those ages are going to get higher and flexible working can be, requested. It doesn't mean you have to give it, but it can be requested up to 16. In terms of trends, I think the big one is around data. So for most businesses, we are not using the data. We don't have data at our fingertips. A classic example is, if I think about it, bus drivers. So bus drivers across Sydney, it's a very stressful job. It's a repetitive job. They have pockets where they cannot hire bus drivers because it's a more affluent area. And so they've used the analytics and the data that's come from that to try and work out more clever ways of attracting bus drivers in some of the more affluent areas, you know, where they've got a shortage. So I think they're the things we're going to start to see is how do we use data to make better decisions as business owners? How can we predict more? I think most business owners in Australia and businesses are still way too reactive. We get blindsided and we think, where the hell did that come from? We don't spend enough time navel gazing. We work in our businesses rather than on it. I think as business owners, we need to get much more astute at actually taking time out and reflecting. So at the end of the year last year, we spent a whole time reviewing our plan. What had we done well? What hadn't we done well? Where's the business going? Tweaking our next 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, and 10 year plan. And I think the statistics is something like 15% of Australian businesses actually even have a business plan. And so I think we're doing ourselves a disservice. So I think we need to get better at understanding our numbers, understanding the planning and the strategic process.
So is there anything from what you're doing in terms of these workplaces where it's a communal workplace? Our team in Melbourne,
yep.
They're in a very funky place where there's lots of other entrepreneurs or teams of people or single individuals who are doing work rather than working from their home,
yep.
Which they could potentially. Is there any of these kind of fragmenting of workplaces impacting the way that we operate? International teams, so we've got a team in the Philippines as well supporting our customer service team here as well as our marketing teams. So what's kind of happening in terms of that kind of world, yeah. that you work in?
So that trend will definitely continue. There will be a more dispersed remote workplace, absolutely. I set my business up in my bedroom, and I ran it out of my bedroom for the first 2 years. And I set it up as a remote workplace because I'd worked remotely with Accenture since 2000, so it wasn't unusual for me. And it saved me something like $35,000 a year in rent for getting an office. Interestingly, now we could afford offices, but there's no point. My team either work from home or the client site. But what I would suggest is place dictates performance. So around the funky offices, people are inspired by the places that they work in. What I have seen anecdotally is a lot of the female entrepreneurs that I visit, their offices are incredibly personalized. And you're doing that here. You know, I was in the waiting room before I started talking to Tony, and he's got all these fabulous pictures of all these authors with these books, and they're fascinating. And so you start to feel the culture envelop you, you know, when you're waiting here. So I think businesses that do a great job of thinking about the organization and how it should look and feel and smell, that also helps culture. That workforce planning is going to get more important. The offshore, I worked in India when I was with Accenture, that offshore component will still be there. It will be for certain roles. It won't work for every role in the organization. But we need to do it that way because it's cost effective for us to do it that way. What I would suggest, though, is anyone who's running remote teams, is it's not a set and forget. It's really critical, and we spend a lot of our time in our business making sure that everyone still feels very included. So we have a tool we use called Voxer, which is like a walkie-talkie tool, and we're connecting with each other all the time doing that. Other people use Slack. We catch up physically every quarter and have a whole day session, and then follow it by a celebration dinner in the evening. So it's really important that people feel connected, even if they're remote from the organization, that there's lots of opportunity for people not to feel like a second-class citizen. Great example is we're doing some work with a client at the moment that has a workforce of carers, and those carers are out in the field. So it's how do we build them so that they still feel very bought into the mission vision that happens in head office? So trying to make them feel impacted and influenced and part of that culture in head office is really, really important for business owners.
I think everyone can agree we're really we've used up our hour, unfortunately. We should do 2 hours. Maybe there's a part two. But Natasha Hawker, she knows heaps about this subject. And I think if you take the time to buy her book and read it and immerse yourself in it, and if you're so empowered, I would seriously think about engaging her organization in some way. I know I'm thinking about it while I'm sitting here. We've got to do a better job. Or we're doing a great job, but of course we always we want to improve. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
And congratulations on your career thus far.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great, Tony.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.